Good morning, everyone. My name's Coop, and I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the 164 group in Wakefield, Rhode Island. We meet at the, it's actually Peacedale, Rhode Island. We meet in the Guild. And it's 6 o'clock on Friday night. It's a perfect time for me to be at my home group. It used to be when I was always out drinking on Friday night, so might as well be someplace constructive. Through the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have not felt the need to have a drink since March 22nd, 1998. I'm a firm believer in working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first came in, I got involved with some people who just don't drink and go to meetings. And I found myself not really able to live like that. And then I found myself involved with a group of people. I was still on that pink cloud a little bit and just starting to come down, and a bunch of people asked me if I wanted to get involved and do a big book study. And having no idea what they were talking about, I agreed to do it. And I had no idea how well my life was going to change. But let me go back a little bit. My last year or so of drinking, I got introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 16 years old. I started drinking fairly early. I was about 11, and drank continuously until the time I got sober. I know right from the get-go that I was not a social drinker. There aren't many 11-year-old social drinkers out there. I just knew I drank differently, though. You know, my friends would have a party, and we'd be sneaking booze out of the, you know, somebody's liquor cabinet or whatever, and, you know, and they'd be passed out drunk, and I'd be wondering what the hell everybody was doing, you know, because I wanted to keep going. And, you know, I'd nurse people back to health so that I'd have a drinking buddy and whatever, you know, put them in the shower, you know, because drinking alone really sucked at 11. But anyway, so as I moved forward in my drinking career, I was about 16 years old, and I came to at my friend's house. And luckily, my friend's mother was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she asked me if I thought I drank too much, and I said, well, probably I did last night. And she said, I was wondering if you'd be willing to come to a meeting with me. And I said, what kind of meeting? And she said, well, it's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, it's a group of people who used to drink too much, and I think you might be able to benefit from that. I didn't stop drinking when I was 16 years old. But the seed of Alcoholics Anonymous was planted. We hear all the time about the fact that people really don't, you know, there's still people out there who don't know what Alcoholics Anonymous is or isn't. They don't even know what Alcoholics Anonymous at all. And so for me, I was lucky. I always kind of had that in the back of my head that I could get to Alcoholics Anonymous if I felt like I, you know, if I needed to. And so my last little binge, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, had gone away for a month. She was going out to better her life and do things and get... She's going to get certified to be a yoga instructor, and she was gone for a month. Well, she was gone for a month, and in the first 2 weeks she was gone, I found my bottom. I went right back. I'd been off and on trying to get sober for a real long time. And after a full day of drinking, started early, as usual, like we do, and about noontime, I was at the bar I'd been hanging out with for a while, and we had started before we got to the bar. And I frequented all the time. They knew me by name. It was like Coop, you know, like Norm used to get on Cheers. And so I walk into the bathroom, and it was one of, you know, bright fluorescent lights, and it was really looking, you know. And I looked, and I didn't recognize when I pushed open the door. And somebody said this last night at the big meeting. I didn't recognize the person in the mirror. I was sick. I just didn't know it. And I was all of about 135 pounds soaking wet. You know, you start to get that disgusting look in your skin and all that. And it hit me that maybe, you know, that something was wrong. But it didn't stop me. I kept drinking. And so that night, later on, probably 11 o'clock at night or so, I was at, you know, we were, a friend of mine and I were at our house. and at my house, and he was literally crawling across the floor to go get us more booze. And as he crawled back across the floor and handed me a beer, I thought to myself, I said, God, what the hell am I doing with my life? And it was the first time I honestly prayed to God and asked him what I was doing. It was the first time I honestly prayed to God and asked for help. And I don't think I even took a sip of that beer. I know it was on the coffee table the next morning. But what I do know is that when I woke up, came to, the next morning, I sat around wallowing in my self-pity and thinking, what the hell am I going to do now? And the thought occurred to me that maybe I should call Alcoholics Anonymous. And, boy, that's not where I wanted to end up. If I had drawn this up, you know, I would have been like, okay, this is going on. Alcoholics Anonymous was not on my list of things to do. And but this is where I ended up, and I'm grateful today that I'm here. You know, there was many times before that that I had gotten on my knees and said, oh, God, if you just get me through this one, I swear I'll never drink again. But when I got on my knees that night on March 21st, 1998, I knew I meant it. Apparently God did too, because I haven't felt the need to have a drink since. Like I said, though, I'm a firm believer in working my program. And I got involved with that group of people, and one of the, you know, we got down on our knees, and we start doing the third-step prayer and the seventh-step prayer. And boy, I had no idea what I was getting involved in. And, you know, as we worked through the program, boy, I started having to take a look at myself and doing all the work. And so anyways, as, you know, we get to the work, I'm falling behind, and my friends are like, oh, come on, it's okay, you're only 20 minutes behind the rest of the group. And, well, they lied, because it took me hours and hours and hours to catch up and do my four-step. Anyways, as I worked my way up, and I finally got to doing step 11 and prayer and meditation. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. And it says in the big book that better men than me are doing it on a daily basis, and it's working for them. If better than men than me can do it on a daily basis, I should try to. So I start trying to work that in my life. You know, we get complacent. You know, we get comfortable. We stop doing things we're supposed to be doing on a regular basis. And I was a few years sober at this point. And I shared in my home group. I said, geez, you know, I said, I've kind of gotten away from praying every morning and every night. And I shared, you know, I like to tattle on myself at my home group. It's the best place to do it because they know me well. And so after the meeting, I'm talking to people, you know, whatever. And one of the long-timers at my group, this woman that I know, she comes up and she grabs my car keys because she saw I was talking to somebody, and she just walked away. I was like, the hell is she doing? So finally, I find her. I'm like, can I have my car keys back? And she said, no, we have to talk first. And I said, okay, what's going on? And she says, well, she goes, you said you were having trouble praying. And I said, yeah. She goes, well, here's what I want you to do. You know, and we always, you know, listen to the long timers, right? They have what I want. And she says, when you get home tonight, she goes, I want you to take your keys. I want you to throw them under the bed. I go, what the hell? And I must have had this dumbfounded look on my face. And she goes, and in the morning, when you have to get down on your knees to pick them out, get them out from under the bed, she said, you might as well pray while you're there. And it worked. And if I were to stand up here today and tell you that, yes, I pray every morning religiously at the same time, at the same spot, and all that other stuff, I'd be lying. Some mornings I forget. And I can always tell when I forget. Because, boy, you know, somebody cuts me off and all of a sudden I'm flipping them off and I'm swearing and I'm like, oh, yeah, hey, guess who forgot to say his prayers this morning? You know? And, you know, and I'll find a spot. I've actually prayed in the port-a-john on the job site because it was the only spot where I could find some, and it wasn't pleasant, but I did it. And, but we do what we do to stay, you know, do what we need to do. So, and, you know, and as far as the meditation portion goes, you know, I told you earlier, my wife teaches yoga. And for years, when she got back from her training, I had a two-week bender. And she got home, I was 2 weeks sober. And she had no idea what was going on in that 2 weeks. I'm pretty sure when she got home, she had no idea that I was going to be 2 weeks sober. So she had called me in the middle of the bender. And kind of had said to me at that point, she said, well, I'm going to have to let you go. And I thought she meant just on the phone. I didn't realize she meant, you know, this isn't working for me anymore. You know, I'm sick of, you know. And so I had no idea, you know, naive. Hey, so yeah, you know, okay, I'll talk to you when you get back, you know. And so anyway, so, you know, I kept trying to call her and call her and call her. And finally she answered the phone. And I was like, hey, I don't have a lot of time left. I said, I'm going to Alcoholics. I'm going to a meeting tonight. And I think that took her by surprise. And I told her I'd been going for the last 2 weeks, and I'd gone to a meeting every night. And, you know, it's amazing what we get when we walk into these halls. And, you know, that first night that I showed up at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I'm going to try and get through this without tearing up because Bev's here. I prayed before I went there again, and I said, God, just help me get through this first meeting. And I walked up to the building. I was smoking a cigarette. And I looked at all the people standing around laughing, having a good time, and I turned around to start to walk away. And this woman said, hey, kid, you looking for Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, yeah. And she's sitting out there today. And she said, come with me, kid. You're in the right spot. And Bev and Carrie took me. They sat me down. They introduced me to some of the men in the group. And if I hadn't prayed that day, and if Bev hadn't seen me go start to walk away, who knows where I'd be today. Now, I'm a firm believer in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that if I was not here, I'd be dead. That's where my alcoholism took me. And how are we doing on time? Oh, I got plenty of time. You guys are screwed. It always seems much longer. Like I'm thinking, oh, God, I must be running over, and still I got about, you know, I still got some time. And but anyways, I'm a firm believer that prayer works in this program. And you know, anyways, I started to tell you earlier, when my wife came back, she came back as a certified yoga instructor, and she worked at a couple places. Finally, we built the yoga studio in our basement, and still I was not going to yoga. I was not doing the meditation. And she's like, you know, it's not really that far a commute. You can just you can walk down the stairs and come and do yoga and meditate. You know, she's and I don't know what it was. I don't know why I wasn't doing it. But now I do it, and now I miss it when I'm not doing it. And but part of the thing that we do on my weekly yoga class is we meditate at the end of class. And that's probably the best meditation I get on a weekly basis. I probably should try to spend more time doing that. But for me, that really makes my connection with God. Sometimes I doze off. I won't lie. I get tired, you know. And I'm sure I'm snoring in the back of the class or something. You know, I really, really start to feel my connection with God. And recently, I served as a panel 60 delegate to the General Service Conference for the state of Rhode Island. And before that, I'd spent a bunch of years serving the area. I was an area secretary. I was a DCM. I was a GSR. I was the area chairperson, worst job in AA. I mean, rewarding as heck, but man, I worked my butt off for those 2 years, I'll tell you. Anyway, so I had been serving Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time because I'm a firm believer, too, that I'll never be able to give back what AA gave to me, but I should continue to try and do so. And if anything I can do, I never say no in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'd been working, you know, steady, doing all this work, and it had been years since I had done any step work. And I talked to a buddy of mine who's we call them big book thumpers, you know. And I said, hey, when this is all said and done, you know, I said, because after I rotated out of delegate, I became the convention chair for the state of Rhode Island. So when this is all said and done, I said, will you go through the big book with me? Help me work my steps again? Because I was starting to feel a little disconnected from my program, starting to feel a little disconnected from the stuff that actually got me here. And he said, absolutely. So as a matter of fact, would have it, at my second convention, which was my last one, he came up to me on Friday night. He goes, so when are we getting started? And we did. The two of us sat down and we went through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous again. And part of that going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is to do all those things we did again that I did when I was just months sober. Get down on my knees and pray with the group of guys, or it was just me and him at the time. And part of that also required that I meditate for my homework one week. I had to meditate for 5 minutes every day. And man, you realize how far spiritually disconnected I had gotten. I thought, here I was, I'm doing all this work. I'm thinking, man, I'm spiritually connected. I was not spiritually connected. You know, and I got to remember that now when I'm doing work in AA, that I need to stay spiritually connected. I need to make sure I'm praying. I need to make sure I'm meditating as often as I can. And when I forget, if I has to be on the floor of a port-a-john, so be it. And, you know, so as we start working our way through and I get this all done, you know, when I get done, I was like, you know, I said, I got to start taking some of the guys through this. Because now all of a sudden I realize I got nothing left to do in AA. As a past delegate, which is probably one of the better jobs in AA, past delegate. In Rhode Island, we call ourselves rusted servants instead of trusted servants. And, you know, really the only thing I'm qualified to do now is coffee maker, sponsor, things like that. So I decided it was time for me to start working the steps with some of my sponsees and taking groups of guys through it. And same thing, part of that was getting down on our knees. What a powerful experience it is for a group of guys, big, tough guy, all sorts of us, you know, big, tough guys, a little strong, you know, whatever, getting down on our knees together in a group, in a circle, and praying. And I got about 3.5 minutes left, so I need to share this story with you. And my wife and I have a great relationship, and I will do anything for her. She watched me hit bottom, and she's been there with me through thick and thin, and she's still with me today. She's sitting out there. I'm grateful I was able to save a seat for her. Don't tell anybody out there. Don't tell anybody out there, but I was like, Bev. You know, she's sitting over there next to Bev. And anyway, so, you know, I'll do anything for her. And about 12 years ago, her mother adopted an infant who was about 4 months old at the time. And it was her cousin's son. And through circumstances, he ended up with her mother. And she said, will you, you know, I need to know that if anything happens to me, because she was 60-plus years old at the time, that you and Coop will take care of him. We said, absolutely. So we spent a lot of time in this little boy's life. Even when they were living in Florida, we traveled back and forth for birthdays, for holidays, things like that. We used the Skype thing. We talk on the phone. It was always hysterical. He'd take the phone and he'd be like, hey, check this out. And he was like three. He put the phone down and he'd go into the back room and he'd come back like 5 minutes later and he'd be like, did you see that? And we'd be like, yeah, that was great, buddy. And, so through many circumstances over the years, my wife and I bent over backwards to help my mother-in-law. And, you know, my wife and I bought a house for them to move into. And, you know, and we did all these things. Then she decided she wanted to move back to Rhode Island. So, we went down there. We picked up. She was living in our home. We did all these things for her and mostly for Nicholas because we wanted to ensure that he had a really good life. And while she's living in our home, she approached us one night, or she approached my wife and, you know, really read my wife the riot act and told her what a jerk I was. And I just said all these really mean and nasty things about me. And I just couldn't, you know, and it hit me. And I was like, I can't be nicer to this woman. And I don't know what I'm doing to her. So when my friend and I sat down to start doing our big book study, it got to that point where I need to start making amends and taking a look at things. I've only got about a minute left. And I said, I can't do it. I can't talk to her about this. I can't. And he said, and he shared a story with me that's not my story to tell. But when he shared this story with me and told me that he prayed and that life had gotten better for him and in that circumstance, I said, well, if he can do it after going through that, I can surely do it for this. And so I did. I prayed on it and I prayed on it. We talked every week. He's like, did you do that? I said, no. And I prayed for the opportunity to come when that would happen. And finally, this woman who despised me, who every time she was at our home, just the tension was so thick, you could cut it with a knife. The opportunity, she was getting ready to leave one day, and I walked out to her car, and I knocked on the window. And because I was sitting there thinking, no better time than the present. And I walked out to her car. And I said, knocked on the window, and I said, "Hey." And she looked at me strange because she had no idea what I was about to say. And I said, "Look," I said, "I've been doing some work in Alcoholics Anonymous, work in my program." I said, "And part of that is for me to claim responsibility for my actions." I said, and I've been looking at it, and I said, "I know we've been through some tough times," and I said, "I know we haven't always seen eye to eye." I said, "But whatever I can do to help repair our relationship," I said, "I'm willing to do it." And she looked at me, she reached across the car, she grabbed my hand, and she said, "I love you." This is a woman who despised me minutes before. And if that's not the power of prayer and meditation, I don't know what is. And we have a great relationship today. It kind of freaks my wife out, I think, because not too long ago we were at, you know, we couldn't even be in the same room together. And now she comes over and, you know, as we were leaving the other day, I told her I loved her, you know, when we were getting ready to come here. And that's power, prayer, and meditation. My time's up. I'm about a minute over, and I apologize for that. But thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Coop. Good job. Okay, our next speaker comes to us from Whitehorse, Yukon. Jennifer.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jennifer, and I am an alcoholic. From Area 79, District 52, Whitehorse, Yukon, Canada. Sorry, I've got a little bit of a cold. If you are not sure where that is, our neighbor is Alaska. My home group is the No Puffin, and that's the bird, Big Book Study. And my sobriety date is November 14th, 1999. What a privilege it is to be asked to share. Thank you. As an elder statesman taught me, when I do some form of service, it keeps me in the solution. I don't know about you, but I can't think my way out of this disease of alcoholism. I have to act my way out. And through acting, I am transported out of that lonely, angry state and given the gift of recovery one day at a time. So again, thank you for the opportunity to share. This topic of prayer and meditation has been quite a process for me. I was introduced to prayer at a very young age. In fact, I was raised going to church, being in the Sunday school, the church choir, and being an altar girl. My mom taught me to pray on my knees by my bedside every night, saying, "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Guide me through the starry night and wake me up when the sun shines bright," followed by the Lord's Prayer. Somehow in my teens, I moved away from church, just felt that I didn't fit in, but continued saying my prayers. So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was actually relieved to see God on the wall, because it was familiar. But at the same time, I was very scared, because if there was a God and I was saying my prayers every night, how did I end up in this mess? Looking back from as far as I can remember, I never felt good enough, pretty enough, smart enough. I also believed in order to receive love and to fit in, I had to prove myself. Therefore, I put extreme pressure on myself. At about the same time, I was introduced to alcohol. In my family, drinking was part of everyday living. My dad would come home from work and have a couple of beers. On the weekends and the holidays, my extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins, would get together and socialize, and alcohol was always there. So at about 8 years old, I was given a glass of wine with a holiday meal. Right from the start, I loved the warm feeling it gave me. I found that alcohol gave me the courage when I was afraid, calmed me when I was anxious, relaxed me physically when my body was tight and in knots. It became my solution for living because it made me feel that everything was rosy and I was not alone. It worked well for some time, but then took everything I cared about away. My health, my self-esteem, my self-worth, which led to all my relations. So, in effect, I was using alcohol as my higher power and just using prayer to ask for my way to be done and to get me out of trouble. My denial of alcoholism was so great that it took me 10 years of in and out of the rooms of AA to finally surrender and admit I am an alcoholic. You see, previously, I did not want to be in the rooms of AA. I wasn't like you people, and all I was listening for were the differences, not the similarities, so I could continue to justify my actions. I wasn't ready to look within myself because I was too busy pointing the finger at everyone else around me. I have gone through seizures, hospitals, 2 detoxes, 2 28-day programs, a day program, and had attempted the 12 steps twice and quit. Eventually, I did go through the 12 steps. I thought I was being rigorously honest, but later, when looking back, I was taking my partner's inventory instead of my own. I had to stop doing it my way. I can't do this on my own. I need help. I finally reached my bottom and was ready to do how it works. Using honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, I started doing what you people suggested. Get and work with a sponsor. Go to meetings. Get a home group. Read the literature. Do the 12 steps. After attending many meetings, I was able to see broken people come to life. And this gave me hope. And I started to believe in the program. I chose a home group since that is what my sponsor suggested. I needed to make a commitment. She told me it is where recovery begins. It is where AA members grow up in sobriety, to discover that we can be loved. It is where we begin to adopt the principles of AA as working realities in our own sober lives. I was able to see step one in 2 parts. I had no problem admitting I was powerless over alcohol. I did have a problem that my life was unmanageable because I was only looking at the outside stuff, such as I had a car, a job, roof over my head, paying the bills. You people gave me the strength and courage to look within and see the lonely, empty state I was in. All I can say that until I truly looked at my part, there was no progression, self-development, or personal understanding. While working through the steps, it was suggested to read pages 86 to 88 daily. Any of you guys? Yeah? No? I learned that prayer was described as constructive review, a request for inspiration, and humbly asking God to make its will known. As I try to continue this practice, I find inspiration becomes more and more a part of my thinking. The Serenity Prayer, which, by the way, really saved my butt and still does today, helps calm me, giving me strength to carry on and to stop me from fooling myself. You told me that this is an inside job, and working through the steps and living them would lead to a solution. That God's will for me is to stay sober so that I can keep trying to be the best person I can be. I would do activities with my friends in the program, and these friends showed me how to live sober and did call me on my stuff, allowing me to grow. My God works through people. You also said the program would teach me to be responsible for my thoughts and actions. The result? I started to feel more comfortable in my own shoes, feeling pretty good about myself. An overwhelming feeling of I am not alone came over me, and I had some moments of calmness within, but of course wanted more of that feeling. Sorry. My sponsor again played a big role in suggesting I get involved in general service and also to get a sponsor. Through working with service sponsor and participating in general service, I have learned that steps are for getting a relationship with myself and a higher power. The traditions and concepts are helping me learn to get along, work, and share with others. These principles have provided me with more tools to help me be the person I want to be. It also gives me the opportunity to meet and make new friends in the fellowship that saved my life. This spiritual program has also allowed me to be a better mom, sister, partner, friend, and co-worker. My daughter is in the room today, and she had a year 4 days ago. Being of service allowed me to meet people all across Canada. So my daughter moved away to go to Edmonton to do some schooling, and that's where she crashed. When she phoned me and said, "Mom, don't tell me I told you so," she said, "I need help, and I'm scared." So being of service, I met so many new people. So I was able, I knew somebody, a past delegate. So I phoned up Walter and said, "My kid's in Edmonton, she needs help, can you get her to her first meeting?" "Sure, no problem." And that's how it started. How great is that? Many times in my life today, I have those, is that odd or is that God moment? I will be thinking about someone, and in the next little while, I will hear from them or see them. Does that ever happen to you? I will be thinking about something and trying to figure out a solution. And all of a sudden, the situation is taken care of. It happens to me way too often to be coincidences. Just lately, I became a little overwhelmed about traveling with my daughter to this big city and getting around. I come from a real small town. That same day, I get a call from a close friend in the program, and guess what? He phoned me to let me know he was going to the International. And out of all the hotels in the city, we are staying at the same one. Go figure. For me today, prayer is an act of reaching out to a higher power and going inward to a deeper knowing. Just as I was taught to describe God in my own way in step 3, I can also come to prayer and meditation however I like. Conscious contact is a deliberate choice to cooperate with my higher power. I open myself to possibilities that I don't control. It's a route of self-discovery. Again, for me, prayer is actively communicating, and meditation is to be fully present, to open myself up, not to be thinking about anything. Listening mentally, not mentally talking. You get that? It is a time to surrender, to receive, and to let go. When I practice this and don't become too busy and forget about it, it creates in me a perfect place no matter what dramas occur in my daily life. For me, meditation doesn't necessarily mean hearing something, yet the habit of listening is a way to build my openness to what life brings me. Walking my dogs around a lake close to my home, hiking and kayaking, being close to nature is where I find it easiest for me to be in the moment. When I am among people and then unable to leave and my body's vibrating, I close my eyes, remember to breathe, and repeat the serenity prayer to myself over and over until a calmness comes over me. At night, I listen to the A grapevine to slow my thoughts, allowing me to have a peaceful sleep. I wish I could say that I do this all the time, but that is not the truth. I still get angry, frustrated, fearful, and stressed. I still blow it, and I don't practice restraint of tongue and pen, and lately these days, the keyboard. I just don't go there as often and stay there as long. I believe this has to do with my daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition. Am I doing the next right thing? And am I taking the time to care for myself so that I can be helpful to others? Perhaps some of the greatest rewards of prayer and meditation are a deep sense of gratitude, accompanied by a feeling of belonging in the world at last, having growth in self-esteem and a feeling of worthiness. Bill W.'s tells us how important this connection is. Other steps can keep most of us sober and functioning. But it is step 11 can keep us growing if we try hard and work at it continually. Thank you for my recovery.
Wow. Thank you, Jennifer. Wow, isn't that amazing? The first two. Wow. I certainly got something to take home with me, you know. Now, next speaker, I'm blessed to introduce a gal. I just can't help to tell you this, but I met her 10 years ago. We were doing a meeting at a treatment center, and this shy little girl came in, and she sat down next to us, my partner. Can't hear me now. Okay. At any rate, I met this little gal at a treatment center, and it's about 10 years ago, and anyway, she's asking all these questions, and sort of lost track of her, and here she is, and you know, that prayer works, that miracle in motion. Anyway, without any more from me, I'll give you Dawn from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dawn, and I am an alcoholic. Prayer meditation. I do believe it's probably the prayers and meditation of people before me, my parents, people that saw me in the rooms here in another time that brought me back. Prayer meditation, I was a person that came here when I got my sponsor, when she would say something, I know. You know, she would tell me, say your prayers. I had these all the time. Say your prayers. Don't forget to say your prayers at night. And I have to tell you, having gone to a Catholic school to the seventh grade and having been raised in a church, I believe I had the prayer meditation thing down packed. I didn't believe that I needed any more information about it. I believe that I went to a Catholic school, so I knew some nice prayers, you know, the Hail Mary, and I was raised in a Baptist church, and that's probably where my doubt came in. That personal contact with God, I did not quite grasp that, and I didn't necessarily believe that you grasped it either. I thought it was more a theatrical performance. Being raised in a Baptist church, they have a part of the service is called altar call. And when everybody comes before the altar and heads are bowed, and I always had a problem bowing my head completely, and I always kept one eye open. I wanted to see who was going to shout, who was going to thank God, who was going to raise their hands in praise, because I didn't feel that. And so I believe that there's a God. I believe probably before I came here scientifically that there had to be a God, because obviously there's the sky and there's the moon and those types of things. But I just didn't have that personal connection. I can remember this recovery, you know, saying to my sponsor, I was unemployed at the time, and I thank God for that today, because that's where my connection began to grow. So I'm going to 2 and 3 meetings, and I'm frustrated. I'm trying to get a job. I had lost my nurse's license as a direct result of my alcoholism and was in the process, really in a holding pattern, trying to do some things, not really certain if I was going to get my nursing license back, but was kind of in a holding pattern. And so I'd been to about 3 meetings in a day, and my sponsor, we're about to go through the steps, and I've read it, you know, many times, and you hear it, the 11 steps, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Well, what I heard was, And I'm thinking I'm pretty intelligent. What I believed it meant was, and I shared this with my sponsor, obviously with this statement, well, I've been to 3 meetings a day. I've said the Serenity Prayer at least 6 times, I think, and we've said the Our Father 3 times, and, you know, doesn't that cover it for today? Came here really self-will run riot. I am the poster child for self-will run riot. I believe that my God was an emergency God. That he came down in emergent situations to get me out of whatever situation I had gotten myself into. But once I got out of that situation, thanks, I'm good to go from here. Wow. The personal experience. For me, prayer meditation came through direction from old timers and my sponsor. And practice and consistency. Not the kind necessarily where I'm on my knees every morning, but that I'm talking to him, because for me, my personal relationship started to develop when I just simply started talking to God and being honest. God, I feel bad, God, because I feel like something should be happening when I'm praying, but I don't know what that is. It took an old timer to tell me praying to God is talking to God, but when you meditate, you simply listen. So then that just confused me even more. I'm waiting. I'm waiting. You know? What was I expecting to hear? So when I lost my nurse's license, the thing and the things that I held on to define how well or how poorly I was doing in life. When I lost the things in my life, my hearing started to improve, you know? First year sober, you're being evicted. My prayer was, Lord, let me stay in this beautiful apartment. Lord, please, somehow, some way, somebody's going to hire me. They've got to, and I'm an RN. Slowly turned into, wow, I have to be out of this place tomorrow. God, just help me not to drink today. Help me to go somewhere, go to a meeting and talk about what's really going on in my life. God had to remove those things from me to get an honest prayer from me. And when he did, my sobriety date is September 3rd, 2008. Phenomenal things started to happen. I got some help for an issue. Wow. Folks have suffered from anxiety and depression. And I've had difficulty navigating through these crowds of people. Through God's grace and mercy, I haven't been medicated since I've been sober. Because I can't take those things for anxiety without not taking them as prescribed. So I got a lot of help. And my prayer and my meditation started to surround my mental illness and dealing with that issue, to reach out to people, to participate, to get in the middle of the bed. I felt conventions, anniversaries, anywhere other than my home group was more like forced human interaction. If anybody has mental illness, you know exactly what I'm saying. And for those of you who don't, I pray you never will. Prayer and meditation has become the buffer to that thing in my mind, because I can't shut it down by myself. And the 12 steps have given me the guidance in my heart and that inner voice that was always there in my alcoholism. The prayer meditation is now the buffer to lean towards my heart and follow what I know is right inside me, to share the madness that continues in my mind today. I would love to tell you that I don't have crazy thoughts, that I don't make poor choices when I lean more to my own understanding rather than to God's. But today I can share it today. Prayer meditation has helped me get over, help me get through. It helps me get through terminal uniqueness. I'm sure I'm the only one that suffers from that. And it gives me a compass to follow what's right in the principles that I've gained from Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. It gives me some honesty to share with somebody who may not be doing as well as I'm doing today. It gives me courage to get over myself when I feel like I am the only one that's going through this, and no one could possibly be having a day like I'm having today. It gives me courage to face my anxiety, and when it's telling me that it's a million people in here, it gives me courage to settle down and know that I am not that important, that everybody in this room had a journey to get here just like I did. It gives me courage to stay. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
Me being here today is, a direct result of sometimes before I got that personal connection. Excuse me. Oh, my goodness. Sorry. Seeing the God in you. One of the biggest results of my prayer meditation, or honest, earnest prayers, was asking God to let people pick me in recovery. Because I don't do very well at picking support. I don't do very well at picking boyfriends. You know. And when I stopped picking, God sent me a husband. He sent He sent me a powerful home group, which just happens to be, got to send a shout out, Wednesday Night Unity, 6 p.m. in Cleveland, 6:30. He sent me a home group of prayer warriors where I know that we all have busy, busy lives and everybody does so many things. I know that we all pray for one another. I can feel it when I go to my home group. And that's why I chose them. Prayer meditation is my simple talk to God. Sometimes I'm saying, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, God, because I know what I'm thinking is just awful. I still have sometimes not the best habit of not being able to shut that thing off, talking about people in my mind, about what they should be doing and what they should be wearing and where they should be sitting. And I thank God that I can share that today. Prayer meditation. Has helped me be free from me. I do want to say that I cannot believe, and I feel like it's God has a sense of humor that I got asked to speak at an international convention. And I've been praying and praying and praying, and I need you to know probably 3 days ago I was, oh, and my God is mighty, and I'm so blessed, and wow, I'm going to an international convention. And up from the time the day before I got here, Wednesday, to today, it's my husband's fault. If he hadn't been in service for 20 years, probably, then it's my home group member's fault who nominated me to be a GSR, and, you know, prayer meditation is something that has to be constant, and it has to be kind of worked on throughout the day for me. Because I was feeling like, why can't I just go to the international convention? I'm already going to have to see a million people, and now I'm going to have to do something at the convention. You know, I can go from zero. My God, you know, I need a lot of work, because my God can go from hero to zero in seconds. And if I'm not careful to talk about it and share where I'm at, and thank God for the people that love me and support me, they totally just ignore me and say, girl, go ahead, go over there. Oh, come on. You know, they don't listen to it. They don't buy into my anxiety. They don't buy into my depression. I thank God for them. And I thank God for all of you. I got a lot of work to do. I'm sitting next to past delegates, and I still have a lot of work to do. I thank you all for listening, and I'm going to ask Bob to save me from me right now, because I need to sit down.